Welcome back to the Brigade of Imbeciles podcast. Today is a really special episode because we're moving away slightly from the episodic content that we've been doing so far. And today we've got a very special guest, and might I add, our first guest on the show.
So today we have Stella Polite Menace joining us to talk about her moon thread, her analysis on the moon, specifically in episodes 6 and 8.
And here's a sneak peek from today's episode.
Wow, 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 wow.
Fuck.
The first thing that I started examining was, when do we see the moon? When's the moon mentioned? And I realized that we don't see the moon at all or talk about the moon until Ed gets there. So that was like, okay, Ed and the moon, there's something there.
So Stella has written a really long thread, in fact, two long threads on Twitter about the symbolism of the moon, about light, about reflection and lighthouses, and how that all adds up to balance. So Stella, before we get into it, just wanted to ask, how did you get into Our Flag Means Death?
So I saw people talking about it on Twitter. I was kind of late. I think it had all been released when I saw people talking about it.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and then so I asked my sister about it because she really likes What We Do in the Shadows.
Mm.
So I thought maybe she'd probably watched it, and she had, but she didn't like it. She thought it was like kind of boring. Yeah, she didn't get very far. So, but she said it wasn't that good. So I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe people just like it because it's gay and it's not that good. But then I saw, you know, people kept talking about it. I was like, okay, I have to give it a chance. And like, thank God, because I watched the whole thing in one day.
Yikes.
Yeah, I couldn't stop once I started. But it was kind of nice, you know, I had no cliffhangers. I didn't have to wait to find out what happened.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What ended up happening was extremely depressing. Since it was later, I knew it was gay. I didn't like believe it until I actually saw them kiss. I started crying immediately, just like overwhelmed.
Yeah, I feel you.
I didn't expect it. I was like screaming.
They queer baited us too much, and then this time they straight baited us.
So. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
I thought it was just two bros, just chilling.
Supercharged friendship.
Yeah.
I mean, some people still think that somehow.
Yeah.
You know, two bros just kissing like they do.
They're really good friends.
Yeah, they're just best friends.
That's how I am with my best friend. Yeah.
It's really interesting, like, the differences between, like, people who had to, like, wait and then people who just watched it all at once. And people who knew that it was gay going in and people who didn't.
Yeah.
Like, for you, it's really interesting since you knew it was gay, but you still didn't believe it.
Yeah, I really, like, I was thinking it was still going to be, you know, like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of gay. I just didn't think it was going to be like, no, it's really actually gay.
I love that. So what's your favorite thing about Our Flag Means Death?
One thing that I really love is how much thought and care was put into just every single aspect of this show.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yeah, it just, every part of the writing, every sentence was thought about, and then every prop and every costume and all of it was so considered. And so that gives me a lot of food for analyzing, which I really, it's like my favorite thing to do. It's like I've been given a really fun game that never ends.
Like a puzzle that you have to go figure out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like 3 months and people are still finding like so many things out. It's insane.
Like on every rewatch.
It's that layered, which is just, it's so cool. I love, like, that's my favorite thing in any show. And then to have it be such an amazing show for representation and everything on top of that, it's just like, beautiful. A gift.
We were blessed with such an amazing cast and crew as well.
Even the cast was very well considered.
And they're all so cute. And yeah, I really love that they're all from like different parts of the world.
Right? The chemistry that they bring is so different, but it works so well like as an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like almost every accent is different. Well, Taika and Reese don't do non-New Zealand accents.
Good for them.
They just don't.
I'm glad that they don't. I love the New Zealand accent.
They have the perfect New Zealand accent.
There's something so cute about the New Zealand accent.
There really is.
And David also says that it was so important, the New Zealand accent, for his writing. That's why when he was in the writer's room, he would keep doing New Zealand accents. That's why his New Zealand accent is pretty good right now.
Interesting. I didn't hear that. That's interesting.
The difference between like a normal pirate going like RR and like versus like, you know, Blackbeard having a New Zealand accent. It's a huge difference.
Yeah, it is. It actually, it does help to think in the New Zealand accent because the things that you write someone saying in a New Zealand accent is totally different than what you would have like a British person say, for sure.
David also described it as the sound of kindness, which was like so sweet. And like Reese was like, oh,
so cute. It's true. Yeah, it's such a nice like friendly accent. I don't know.
So Stella, what exactly is your background and how does that guide you in your analysis? Like, what kind of lens are you basing this symbolism from? Is it more like a astrological, historical way, or like a more scientific lens of looking at this?
My only background relating to this is I'm an English major in college. And I'm a writer, you know, like in my personal time. I am a history buff. So we've got reading, writing, and history that I enjoy just in my spare time. But everything that I came across in this thread was just me very persistently digging, and like I find a new piece of information and I think about it, and then I come to maybe like a theory, and then go search for other things kind of related to that, and then that's how I go on these rabbit holes where suddenly I'm reading Prometheus Unbound all of a sudden. I have had no idea about anything tarot related before this. It just happens that there's when I was researching, you know, moon symbolism, a lot of the time the search results would be moon tarot card symbolism, and so I was like, okay, you know, tarot and spiritual things like that, often there's a historical reason for like why things symbolize what they do, like these big symbols like the moon and the sun and all that. There's all sorts of symbolism everywhere. So I was looking into all sorts of stuff, and a lot of it ended up being relevant, like surprisingly tarot. I'm kind of feeling like maybe there's somebody is either into tarot or Wicca or something like that in the writer's room.
Yeah.
And like we have Buttons, who's like does Wiccan things and is kind of like spiritual in his weird way.
Could you share a bit about how you started on the analysis and like how inspiration strikes you when you're analyzing a show?
The thing that I am mostly trying to do is just wrap my head around it so that I can write my own fic. When I'm reading fiction, I like when people seem to really understand the source material.
Mm-hmm.
It makes such a huge difference. So before I write anything, I want to make sure I really understand it.
Yeah.
And then in doing that, that's when I start to like get to like, oh, what's that? You know, and then I spiral down rabbit holes from there.
Then we all.
Yeah, right. So this one was exactly that kind of thing. Someone else was analyzing the Kraken, and they had a screenshot of the Kraken coming up, and there's that giant moon in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, what is that? That's, why is that moon there like that, so huge?
Yeah, it's ridiculously huge. It's like Bruce Almighty when he pulls the moon towards him that
big. That's exactly and so low. What it's like. You don't actually see the moon that often in the show, like actually see it. There's moonlight, but the times when you actually see the moon are very few, and I think they're all significant. So it's weird. So it caught my attention. I have so many things that I just throw in my notes app. Like I had all these pictures where I just said the moon, and then I said, it's always full. Why is it always full? What does this mean?
It's actually flat earth. In our flag means death. That's how historically inaccurate it is. That's also how they managed to sail across the ocean so quickly.
Aha, it's the fast travel. It's just because it's flat.
Yeah.
But then, like, the next day, I saw another screenshot of The Art of Fuckery when you can see the moon through the windows in the captain's mm-hmm. quarters. Okay. And I was like, there's the moon again. What does this mean? And then, you know, obviously, I started thinking about it, and there's the moon in You Were Fine Things Well. And that's like, it's also such a significant moon. It's huge, and it's a really important moment. So that's when I was like, okay, there's something to the moon. So I would like to figure that out. So that's what got
for sure.
This started. Yeah.
I have this like timeline that I've been mapping out, right? Or that I mapped out. And some of it comes from the full moon, in which parts they verbally mention the full moon.
Uh-huh.
But it's like really funny because Izzy says at the start of Art of Fuckery that it's been 2 weeks and the full moon was 2 weeks ago. So why is the full moon still there?
Exactly. That's not right.
There's like a huge significance to why the VFX people are putting a full moon in like the title and in so many parts of this particular episode, The Art of Fuckery.
Right. The first thing that I started examining was, when do we see the moon? When's the moon mentioned? And I realized that we don't see the moon at all or talk about the moon until Ed gets there. So that was like, okay, Ed and the moon, there's something there.
Mm, that's really fascinating.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then the first thing we hear about the moon is Ed being wrong about the moon.
Mm, yeah.
Which is also, that seems significant. So he's wrong about the moon. It's because it's a leap year. Steed asks him if it makes a big difference. And he says it makes a huge difference. And then he's like ready to die because he got the moon wrong.
I gave up instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, okay, well, I guess that's that.
He tends to do that.
He does. He does. He's not got a lot of self-preservation instinct.
Yeah.
And I know, like, you know, we all joke that it was not a leap year in this actual year. And that's one of the, like, inaccuracies.
Mm-hmm.
But that got me thinking, like, you know, why? There's got to be a reason then. Why have that be the reason?
Yeah.
Probably one of the first things I looked into. And that's when I found the whole thing about leap years being a time when all the ordinary rules are out the window, but most especially gender roles, which is like, boom, okay, that's a big theme in this show. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Holy cow. And that was so surprising. Every step of this analysis, I would find things and just be like, whoa, I'm on a trail here.
The Charlie Day meme.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how I felt. And it just got worse and worse as I went on. I was like, am I just like losing my mind? Am I going to publish this to Twitter and have everyone be like, whoa, okay, you need to step away from the computer. That's how it felt. But when I kept looking into things, I kept finding things that I was like, this seems like a thing. Like not only are the leap years, the gender roles are reversed, then there's the thing about how back when it was a time where ladies could propose to men, they had to have a crimson petticoat on. And you had to have a corner of it that the men could see. Otherwise, it wasn't like valid. And he was like, crimson, yeah. Crimson petticoat or scarlet, whatever.
Yeah, that was really crazy.
Right. So this just makes me wonder, like, did the writers research all this? Or is this just, oh, sorry, my dog is barking. When I very first looked into the moon, like the first thing that comes up talking about it symbolically is that it's like a feminine symbol. I don't like saying femininity. It's convenient, but I think femininity as society defines it, because I think the show actually does have a lot to say about like how that's not really, you know, something that is only for women at all. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, so what society defines as feminine? That was the main symbol. Then we have like the gender roles being reversed on a leap year. And so that was like, okay, I have my track of what I think this is talking about, like what I think's going on with the moon. But then at the same time, there's all these other meanings that are kind of applicable. Like in the Art of Fuckery, in tarot, the moon card is a symbol of deception, which is what that episode is about. And then Calico Jack is deceptive. So there's a bunch of meanings to the moon, and a lot of them seem applicable. But mostly, I think the biggest symbolism is that it's a feminine symbol. So then I think Ed getting that wrong is, you know, pretty clearly like he's living in this hyper masculine world of piracy and has to suppress any what we say is feminine traits like softness and talking about your feelings and all that. So that's the main thing, I think, is that he needs to reconnect with the feminine influence of the moon. And then who's pretty well connected with that? But Steed, the lunatic. And then there's Moonstruck, which is like, you know, I'm moonstruck by someone. I'm in love with them and I can't think straight. That was another one of those things where I found it and I was like, my goodness, okay. The writers were sitting there like thinking about this stuff, right? Like this, I found a thing that they did on purpose, I think.
Yeah, like they had to be thinking about this. Like, it can't just be like one big coincidence.
That's why I love analysis, not just because I get a better understanding, but because it's really fun to do this and be like, oh my gosh, I think I know where this is going, you know?
And it's so impressive that the writers take so much time and effort into including all of these, or like having those kind of be the driving force for the story or the emotions or the relationships in the show.
Absolutely. I am blown away by the amount of care that they, and research. They say they didn't do research, and I don't think they did a lot of historical research, but I think they did a lot of research for just writing a good plot, you know?
Yeah, and like all the symbolism.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, it's so detailed that I find it hard to believe that they, you know, they didn't put in research.
I think they just ignored the the historical Speed part. Speed and Blackbeard part, but everything else is pretty accurate.
You know what I think is that they did all this research and then they just picked which things they were going to use and not use, rather than this that they didn't do any research, which they say. I think they're liars.
So you mentioned that the Kraken scene was the thing that sparked your interest in analyzing what the moon means in the series. So could you talk about what the moon symbolizes in Art of Fuckery?
So there's a lot of different things happening with the moon, I think, in that episode. So first of all, the episode starts with the moon. And this is right after You Wear Fine Things Well. So we just had that whole situation under the moon. I feel like one of the reasons we start with the title card is because Ed and all of us, like the audience, who were all under the influence of this kind of feminine moon, meaning just that we're like in the safe space of the revenge where we can be, you know, whoever we are, which is how that episode opens, is we have everyone's just vibing and Ed's like free. He's the most open and available that anyone's ever seen him. So he's under the moon's influence. So I think that's why, one of the reasons why we have the moon title card. And then the other one is, like I said, the moon represents deception. And obviously the Art of Fuckery is all deception. And then we have Ed's Kraken story, which is also a deception to the crew, but to himself. Just the Kraken as a mythical creature is a lie. So that's the title card moon. Then we get to the actual Kraken story, and that's the thing that started it all for me, and it turns out there's like a lot there. There's a lot going on. First of all, the first thing to remember is that the moon is very representative of motherhood, especially the full moon. The full moon is like maturity and pregnancy a lot of the time. We have the moon as a mother, and that whole scene is Ed, we find out, going to kill his father because he's abusive to his mother.
We kind of see the moon like watching over him, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, like, he looks to the moon and there's no Kraken at first, and then the Kraken comes up. So that makes me think it's kind of symbolic of like him thinking of his mom, and then uprises this violence in him in order to protect his mom. So in that scene, I think that mainly it's supposed to represent his mom, but there's a lot also going on, which is the deception of the whole story. The Kraken's not real. He's displacing his story onto the Kraken. And then the moon being femininity, or, you know, softness. We also have the symbolism of the Kraken guarding that away. So we have Ed's like persona that he assumes, the Kraken, which is kind of like a hyper violent and scary figure to intimidate people. And so it's guarding the feminine soft part of him that would kind of get him killed in the world that he lives in. So that's another symbol of the moon and the Kraken in that scene. Then we move on to Steed's fuckery, and we follow the Dutch people into the captain's quarters, and through the windows, you can see a full moon. It's a lot smaller than any that we've seen before. And also notably, Izzy at the beginning of this episode tells us it's been 2 weeks, and it was the full moon 2 weeks ago. So this moon should not be full.
And another significant part of this is that what they're using as the backdrop is the volume. So the VFX team has to create all of that beforehand, or put it in after if they're just doing green screen.
Right. But yeah.
You know, so it's very important that they actually put the full moon, specifically have to create the full moon and put it in the background.
Right. And the location too is like, I don't think there's any other time that we see like the sky really well through those windows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's significant. Like, there's a reason that moon's there, and it's definitely a callback. I mean, those are the windows that we get the pretend Kraken knocking on.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's there because of the whole Kraken thing. So what I think it means, I'm torn on like a lot of it, but one thing for sure is the reason I think it's a lot smaller than the one in the story is that Ed has really been using the Kraken to separate himself from the feminine softness for years now, for a long time. And so the moon...
Compared to when he was a child.
Right, exactly. So the moon's really far away now instead of being way up close. You know, and it makes sense as a child that he was more in touch with that and it was very close and now it's very far away. But I also think that it kind of is symbolic of when the Kraken was rising in the story, it was for the purpose of protecting his mom. But now the Kraken, if he killed Steed, this would be his first murder that was just a murder just because he's not defending anyone. There's no justification. So that would be probably symbolically like a death to the moon.
Because Steed is the moon?
Yes, I do think so. But also I just think it would be really killing off any femininity, softness, like really doubling down on the hyper-masculine violence aspect of things.
Yeah, so what about the symbolism of the moon in We Go Way Back?
Yeah, again, we have a full moon on the opening sequence of We Go Way Back. And this is when we get Buttons and he's doing his moon bathing with Carl. Poor Carl. I think it's very interesting that Calico Jack rides up under the light of the full moon, because then it's like...
Rides up.
Yeah. He appears in like a shroud of fog, which actually is something I think is relevant too, but I don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter. But
maybe he's like, you know, like when, what is that? Like Greek mythology, when the guide comes in the boat and then has to bring you to the underworld, there's usually fog there.
I'm going to write that down.
Ooh, big brain moment.
I've noticed oftentimes there's a lot of fog involved with Ed in general. Sorry, I'm going to seg for just a second, but there's a fog when he gets the moon wrong, the fog that is like hiding them from the Spanish.
Yeah.
There's fog when he comes to, you know, like rescue his new boyfriend on the Spanish ship. And then there's this fog with Calico Jack. I don't know if there's more, but like all of those feel kind of significant to me. So I've been, but I didn't think about that one. So I'm writing it down. Okay. So anyway, so yeah, so we got Calico Jack. Here's Calico Jack and Buttons. And I just think it's really interesting because we have the moon as a feminine symbol, which Buttons is, he's like really in tune with that part of the moon. And then we have the moon as deception, which Calico Jack is only here to be a deceiver and trick everyone into their doom. So it's like a really interesting thing happening. And Buttons already, he knows right away that he doesn't like Calico Jack. I didn't realize this until I was doing my analysis, but Buttons dips for the whole episode after he meets Calico Jack. He has nothing to do with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's not even in the background. He is just gone. He said he has bad moon juju. And it's almost the full moon. It's a sacred time for Buttons. So, so he leaves.
Until the very end when he's like, can you not have a bit of respect?
Yes. Yeah, well, because then it's the full moon and that's his time.
Yeah.
So we see the moon that night when he shows up. And then the next time we see it is that situation there happening there. And it's just all day we've had Calico Jack being just the most hyper-masculine that you could possibly
being Will Arnett.
Whippies and yardies and coconut fights. He is like, he's everyone's least favorite character, I think.
Vess loves him.
Vess
loves him. We have a Calico Jack apologist in our midst.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
I have to be the devil's advocate. I love him.
She has the worst judgment.
No.
I'm sorry,
Izzy is better
do.
Than Calico Jack.
No, I'm a Calico stan.
Okay, well, you know, somebody has to be.
I know. There has to be that one person.
Maybe for the right crowd, but he was just not among. Actually, you know what? He was kind of among the right crowd. It was just the wrong day. Also, he was there to be a jerk, so.
Yeah. You're the best, Steve.
Poor Steed. I feel so bad for him that whole episode.
He's so pouty.
Yeah, I do love pouty Steed, though. So.
Yeah, he's the cutest.
So he's Calico Jack being Calico Jack, and he's still being Calico Jack during the full moon, which Buttons is using for, I think, a Wiccan or also just pagan ritual called Esbat, which is just you're honoring the full moon and like asking it for, I guess, blessings. So it's pretty important for him. And then the full moon ritual for a mother moon, a female moon. So it's very feminine time. And then there's Calico Jack, like flinging his whip around.
Oh, the symbolism behind that as well.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Got dichotomous images here going on. And then when Buttons is like, okay, you know, I'm trying to do my thing here. What does Jack do except kill Carl, which is not only like hyper masculine, but it's also like the full moon represents motherhood and pregnancy. So it's like kind of like a life giving thing. And then he takes a life instead. And he does it because he's being, you know, crazy masculine. So it's just very like at odds. There's a lot of like symbolism happening there. And then we also have the whole reason Jack's there as deception. So he enacts that deception and gets Ed to leave. And I think it's interesting that his whole deception is the hyper-masculinity. He comes in and is like, oh, I heard you're being like a soft guy with this guy over here on the revenge. Let me remind you that you're, you know, not that, and you're not allowed to be that. And that is how he, you know, gets him to leave. Like that's his strategy for
paired with the low self-esteem and him not thinking that he's good enough for Steed after Steed says like, you know, I don't like you when you're around this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Poor babies.
I know. You know, it's interesting that Steed takes charge in that moment.
Yeah, for once, right?
Because it's kind of like we would say it's a masculine trait to do that if we're dividing them up, but it's under the light of the full moon. But I do think Steed is actually...
He's also dressed like a literal grandma in that scene.
That's true. You know what? That's actually a good point because I think the overall message is one of balance, and Steed does balance the two aspects really well. And like that's a good representation is him like being really assertive and taking care of his crew. Like, you know, it's traditionally ascribed to like a paternal figure, but he's in his nightgown and ruffled collar.
In the previous episodes, when he's in that fuchsia breakup robe, I mean, not breakup yet, but he wears like a more, I guess, masculine unbuttoned shirt. He kind of does balance that. But then in this episode specifically, he only wears his ruffly nightgown.
Oh, that's a good observation. I didn't even look at the costuming. And I'm sure it's significant. I swear everything is significant.
Yeah, so David also says that the fuchsia gown is significant because it symbolizes Steed's blossoming as a person, basically in the light of Ed.
I do think a conclusion of my analysis is that they need each other to be the best person that they can be.
So apart from the moon, I think in your thread you also mentioned a lot about reflections and about how we see Ed in a different light because of the reflections that he sees himself in. Could you talk a bit about that?
Okay, so I did not expect this to be related. I noticed that the only time we see reflections, which are usually significant, there's a lot of symbolism behind them. And the only time that we see them, it's Ed.
Yeah, when I read that, it was really, like, I was really surprised. Like, I didn't notice that only Ed sees reflections, basically.
Right. Yeah, I was really surprised when I first noticed it, too. You would think you would have seen Steed looking in a mirror at least once. So it's... seems significant.
Actually he did in episode 4 when he was walking towards the mirror after like undressing to reveal that he was already dressed because he was going to leave his family.
Oh, you're right. Interesting. I guess that it kind of tracks with mirror symbolism that he's like kind of, you know, examining himself at a critical moment in his life. I didn't think about that. Thank you.
Okay. But I mean that's just like a mirror. It's not like a reflective surface, like you mentioned in your thread, they're all a different item that he's looking through.
That is actually a good point because I like in my thread, my theory is that, you know, what the reflecting object is matters, and mirrors are just like a clear image of yourself. And so Steed does see himself pretty clear. Well, he's not super clearly, but more clearly than Ed. Anyway.
As clear as you can in the middle of a midlife crisis and you're leaving your family.
Exactly. That's right. He is. We give him credit for trying.
Fond regards, Steed.
Yes. Oh my God, Steed. Why? That's such a bad... Poor Mary.
Her face was like, what the fuck?
I can't blame her.
And now I think we can move on to the symbolism of lighthouses throughout the series and how that balances out with the moon.
My whole theory is just that the show is telling us that Steed and Ed need each other to be the best possible person. They're really good for each other. They feed each other's, like, they balance each other's strengths and weaknesses. The moon doesn't have any light of its own. It is basically a big giant mirror for the sun, mm-hmm. and that's where the light comes from. That brought me to the lighthouses, when they need to be a lighthouse in episode 4. So examining that, I was looking at their lighthouse that they make, and we've got like a big giant mirror,
yeah,
and Steed's lantern, because there's two things. There's the lantern, which is clearly Steed's thing. He's the one who's like making the flames for the lighthouse, and then there's the mirror. So that's Ed. That was my conclusion, is like, okay, maybe Ed and mirrors is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time we see Ed with mirrors. No, the first time is when he's on the sick bed and he's just looking into Steed's hand mirror.
Mm-hmm. We don't actually see his reflection in that. He's just making funny faces, right?
He's at like a weird time in his life where he's trying to figure out, you know, mm-hmm. what to do with himself and like if he wants
and which image to project.
Yeah, exactly. And the next one is the lighthouse, which is under the influence of like the moon, meaning Steed. We've got Ed, like, he's in a new situation where he's with someone who accepts all the softness in him. And he's just kind of exploring, this guy seems to be okay with me, like wanting to wear fancy clothes. Yeah. And he's trying to figure out what image to project. Maybe I can be a little bit soft. So I think it's significant that's the only other time we get him with mirrors, and it's just a regular mirror. And what it's reflecting is Steed's light. And together, they're making a lighthouse, mm-hmm. which is just felt very significant. But to continue with the reflections, the next one we see is in episode 5, when mm-hmm. Steed is teaching table etiquette and Ed gets called a racial slur. And he's like having, you know, kind of a crisis, maybe a flashback, not sure. Either way, he's thinking about his red silk and how he got that and how his mom told him, you know, that we can never be those kind of people. That's just not for us.
And you mentioned also the significance of the zooming in on his reflection, and then it crossfades into the red silk itself.
He's really considering that moment in his life, and can he ever be those kinds of people? You know, maybe it's not even actually possible for him because of his race and class. And, you know, he's thinking about what that guy just said to him, which is that it doesn't matter how nice you dress or whatever you do, you'll never be like us. So it's significant that he's looking into a silver platter mm-hmm. and seeing himself. And that's what he's thinking about. He's seeing himself through the lens of the fancy rich people who own silver platters. And who he sees is a little kid who is poor and can't have fine things.
And he's holding on to that fine thing. And when he finally lets go of Steed at the end, he lets go of that fine thing. And he lets go of the possibility that he can be like one of them.
Yeah. And then with the moon symbolism, it's also the idea that he can be soft at all. So it's twofold, which is actually, you know, it's probably true in the awful, like, colonizer society. Ed could never be one of them, but why would you want to, is what I think the show is trying to say. Like,
yeah,
in the You Wear Fine Things Well, we have the return of the red silk, which ties back to the crimson petticoat on the leap year. Steed putting it in Ed's pocket so the corner is visible is telling him he can be the girl. So Steed gives him the petticoat, and I don't think it's like, you know, literally like you can be a girl, but it's just like you can be soft, and also,
and you can take the lead. And because Ed is the one who's been taking the lead, and like, you know, he's the one who says, what makes me happy is you. And he's the one who like goes in and kisses Steed as well.
That's a good point. I didn't consider if he did actually take the lead. And you're right, he does. So in that moment when Steed gives it to him and he's telling him you can be feminine, you can be in love in a gentle way and all of that. And then we see him, you know, trying that out for the rest of the season until, boom, you know, his heart's broken. Izzy comes and is like, hey, you cannot be like this or else. And that's what Ed's been told his whole life. So it's not surprising that he's like, oh, doesn't hold on to the idea that he can be that. Of course, he believes that he can't. So then he releases his heart, the opportunity to be anything but what he's always been. And then it goes floating off into the moonlight back to the femininity that he's guarding all his life with the Kraken. And then he becomes the Kraken.
Beautiful symbolism.
Yes, very symbolic. The knife is, you know, clearly he's just looking at himself as the Kraken.
Yeah.
And a very violent object. So, yeah. So that's all the reflections.
Oh, there's still the reflections when they're in the bathroom.
Yeah. So that kind of ties back to the lighthouse part of it, because I don't know what is reflecting, but there's two reflections. It's like two circles, and Ed is in one and Steed's in another. Steed has a like candelabra in his reflection and Ed is unlit. So that really mirrors the lighthouse scene where Steed has the light and Ed has the reflecting object. And in that moment, we have Ed really conflicted between this idea that he is only ever going to be this violent, bad person. He thinks he is the Kraken and that's all he can be. And then we have Steed coming in saying, no, like, I don't think you're that. And I think we can be friends and it's okay for you to be, you know, upset and like just coming in with all the anti-toxic masculinity in the world. And it works. And we have an Ed who is back to being balanced after that. That's when we get the scene of they exit the bathroom to walking over the deck decoration, which is like fish, yin yang, Pisces.
Yeah, it's a yin yang symbol.
Yeah, like it reminded me of like the Pisces symbol.
Yeah, which is, it has a similar meaning to yin yang. It's just balance. It's shot very significantly. They're walking together over the fish. So it's like that moment where Ed was able to reflect Steed's positive qualities, the things that he needs from Steed. They both reflect each other, but Ed got what he needed.
And the only other time that you see that is at the end when Ed is looking up at the flag, right?
Yep. And he is very unbalanced at that point. He is tipped way over on one side. In the Kraken scene, there's a really prominent lighthouse. The Kraken, like, story that Ed tells. There's a lighthouse at the end of the, I don't know, dock that his father is walking towards. And it's rotating normally until the Kraken attacks. And then it just beams light directly on what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I puzzled over that for a while. I've seen it suggested that it's the weight of Steed's judgment, but I don't think that's the case because Steed has no idea that the story is fake at the time that he's hearing it. So mm-hmm. Why would he be judging? And also he wouldn't judge. He didn't judge at all. I think the lighthouse in that scene is actually Ed's own moral compass because it's a murder. And we know that Ed is actually really, really not okay with that. He doesn't murder ever again. And clearly it like eats him up inside. He thinks he's like this horrible person. So I think that lighthouse is his own conscience saying, don't come further this way. Cause that's what a lighthouse means. If the lighthouse light is pointing at you, you don't want to go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't go that direction ever again. He never kills again.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Isn't it? Because there's that really prominent lighthouse. I started looking into lighthouses. I found a poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that starts on a rocky ledge. And so that was another one of those moments where I was like, well, maybe I'm insane, but this seems significant. and while I was reading through, I mean, there's a lot in that poem that seemed, you know, kind of significant. So I think the lighthouse has kind of a masculine symbolism. I didn't find that much like in literature. It's okay. It's kind of phallic. Also, though, it's the way it's used in the story is like it's kind of the weight of all of the expectations that are put on Steed to be like to perform masculinity the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Is all kind of symbolized by the lighthouse. So it's, I think, interesting that just like Ed is wrong about the moon, Steed is wrong about lighthouses. That is, I think, part of the whole how they balance each other and how the whole theme of this is balancing like gendered expectations. And then it's also interesting to me that Steed is kind of the one to correct Ed on like femininity and like the moon. And Ed's the one who corrects Steed about what it means to be a lighthouse. So, in summary, we've got the moon as a feminine symbol, and it is encountered to perhaps to the lighthouse as a masculine symbol. We have a lighthouse made up of a mirror and a light source, and the mirror is very moon-like, and the light source is very sun-like, and both of those masculine and feminine. So we have a lot of masculine and feminine imagery, and the overall message is one of balance. And we have a lot of balance imagery in the yin-yang Pisces fish. And also, actually, the full moon also represents balance.
And not only that, but when they were doing the makeshift lighthouse, like the lantern and the mirror had to balance perfectly in order to swing in like 360.
That is true. And then also, I didn't notice this before, but the thing that they are, that is running between them is a spyglass.
Yeah.
So we've got like a magnifying kind of thing happening also. So it's a back and forth balanced kind of thing.
And somebody mentioned on Twitter that sort of technological breakthrough wasn't invented until later.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It was just like a big flame for a long time. So actually, this is one of those times where I feel like they ignored historical accuracy on purpose, because I think having the light and the lens,
the imagery,
right? I think it represents Ed and Steed together.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So then the red silk is also kind of a feminine symbol in this case. It represents Ed's heart, but it's also his softness, his feminine side, and ability to be fully himself, because everyone is a balance of both of those things. Nobody's really just one or the other, unless they're pretending, which is always what Ed is doing. So that was his permission to be balanced from Steed. And then symbolically, he gets rid of it at the end because he's been hurt by that softness at this point.
He lets the silk go, which kind of represents, you know, letting go of the life that he wants to lead, or the hope that he may be able to be like Steed, or let go of Steed. But at the end, we also see him crying and looking at the lighthouse painting.
So Stella, I think part of what we want to do on our podcast when we have guests on is to actually ask them what the show means to you. So do you want to share a bit about like what Our Flag means to you?
Man, I don't even know how to say it. It's so much more than just a show to me. It means so much. Okay, we've got this amazing show with amazing representation that I haven't experienced before. Like this level, I was thinking about how it's like a silly, fun comedy, but it also gets to be just like extraordinarily gay, which is just so uncommon. You know, usually if your show is allowed to be gay, it's a gay show. It's about being gay, and oftentimes it's sad. And this is just like a really fun show where everyone just happens to be gay, and it's not like the focus. And that is like a level of representation that I didn't know that I needed until I had it. And it means so much. It almost really is life-changing to see that kind of representation when you've not seen it before. So it means a lot to me. And then on top of that, we have the lovely community that's formed around it.
Mm-hmm.
I have made so many friends and done so much cool stuff that I just dove right in. I'm doing all these analyses and writing fiction again for the first time in a long time. Like, and I know I'm not the only one. I talk to people all the time who are like, their muse is awoken, and yeah, it's all about this cool show. Like, it's amazing.
Great. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us and coming on and talking to us about your thread.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Hopefully we can speak to you again about like the lantern stuff and other things that you want to talk about.
Yeah, and your future analysis.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, anytime. I would love to.
Thanks for tuning in to this special episode.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.